Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
So today we have a panel on women leadership, and I have the pleasure to welcome Caroline Welsh, that you may have seen yesterday. So Caroline is the co-founder of Mindsight Institute with Dan Siegel, and she's the author of this book, let's see if we can see here. Yes, The Gift of Presence, A Mindfulness Guide for Women. We also have Dr. Andrea Pennington from France. So Dr. Andrea Pennington also did a session on the inner critic yesterday, I think. Yes.
Imposter syndrome. Yes.
Imposter syndrome. Yes, absolutely. Andrea is an integrative physician, acupuncturist, meditation teacher, and media specialist. We also have with us Rubda from Australia. So welcome, Rubda. Rubda is working with people around the globe around conscious leading, self-leading, and self-development. And she's also known as, she has grown up with Osho. So welcome, Rubda. And we also have Amanda Hester. So Amanda is Director of Operations of Mindful.org. And she also have a huge background on mindfulness and meditation since childhood, as she's the second generation Buddhist. So welcome, everyone. A pleasure. So my first question would be, because actually this panel has been requested by the Facebook group and our participants, and it came to me that I think there's a specific way for leadership for women. And the first thing is something that we've been talking with Caroline, which is the multitasking side and the quest for balance for women. So I would like to have your own idea on why it is important to talk about this side of women leadership around multitasking and this quest for life balance. So I would start maybe with Caroline. I have you like next to me.
Sure. That sounds great, because we're all experts in multitasking, so any one of us could kick this off. A good way to start might be to just get our hands around the roles that women play. Men typically have a home run if they make a good living, but women have all kinds of things that we are held to pretty high standards on. And what I'd like to do is read a list for you, which will explain very quickly and clearly why we have to multitask. And these are roles that we as women play above and beyond family, friend, or work roles. I interviewed 100 women for my book, and here are some of the roles they're playing, which explain why we're all multitasking. Mentor, mentee, wingman, simplifier, connector, go-to person, confidant, support system, caregiver for many, reluctant leader, community builder, steward of the earth, cohesiveness captain, and keeper of the household. So with that, it's no wonder that we're multitasking. And we're going to talk a lot about the workplace today, but there's a lot going on there that has to do with the fact that on top of responsible leadership positions, we're also expected to be the ones taking care of our kids. So the motherhood penalty, for example, explains a lot for many of us. When I leave to go coach my daughter's soccer team at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, my colleagues say, wow, she's not really devoted to this job. If my male colleague leaves, he gets extra credit because he's such a great dad. They don't go to that place where he's not doing a great job at his work. So I'll just put a period there for the moment.
Absolutely. So, Rubda, do you have maybe anything to share around that, around multitasking? And
yeah, you know, it's a whole part around there that is around balancing the busy. And I do a whole thing around that. And I had to start with myself because it's, you know, running a business, as these ladies know, and having a partnership, you know, an intimate kind of connection with someone and any of your children and so on, you've got many things in the air. And I like what Caroline said, you know, women have a different kind of standard that they're kind of held against, for the better or for the worse. Yeah. But I do want to say, one of the things that I noticed, especially with women in career in multitasking, is we somehow, consciously or unconsciously, slightly split off from the feminine, and we got a little bit more masculine because we had the standard to live up to, being in the boardroom with men and so on, or in meetings and so on. And I noticed that split from the feminine was creating more stress within me. And feminine gives us what? Many things. It nurtures us, it's receptivity, it's patience, you know, has many qualities, the feminine. And by the way, I'm not talking about just women. I'm talking about that feminine that we have within us. Men have that aspect too, right? So I found myself becoming more masculine, more defiant, more ambitious, more this, which is great, good qualities in the masculine, but I wasn't connected to that other part and I was feeling this. So one of the things I was playing with was changing at the time when watches were very popular. Now everyone has a phone. Was changing my watch when I got home from this sort of masculine looking watch to this kitschy feminine watch. And it was like my time to kind of balance the busy and slow down and connect with myself so that I don't lose my ground. And, you know, every time I go out there, I was becoming more flustered and more, you know, disconnect. So I had to find that way. And one of the ways, of course, we have many ways, is to sort of play with my timing and how I can connect with the feminine, yeah, to balance some of that within myself, yeah. And I will put a period there.
Perfect. But we will talk about this feminine energy as well later on, because it's a good point. Andrea, do you have anything around that?
Yes, definitely. I totally relate to you, Rupta. I had the same experience. And I noticed with a lot of my colleagues in the medical world, a lot of us female physicians felt like there was a whole other standard that we had to live up to. And many of my colleagues who took on a more masculine energy to prove their worth, to prove they could keep up and all of that sort of stuff, they became labeled as the alpha bee. And multitasking was actually something that people kind of wore as a badge of honor as women. And I remember a colleague of mine joking, saying, well, yeah, we have two X chromosomes. We're made to multitask. Men can never do what we can do. And so it was carried around as a badge of honor. And it's only been over the last decade that we're realizing that there's this shift going on globally, not just in us alpha women who realize we've been divorced from the feminine, but it's kind of this global awakening to the need for those feminine qualities, which you so rightly put, we have it in men and women. It's not a gender thing, but this receptivity. And for me, the biggest thing that I had to learn in re-embracing my feminine was compassion. It was self-compassion, because as soon as I wanted to unplug and I put limits and boundaries on not always being available, not always rushing to be the first one to answer, there was this judgment that came up, like, you know, what are they going to think, or what are they going to say, or maybe I'm going to miss out. And so I had to like practice self-compassion to just say, no, you need rest. Your boundaries are important. And that's really what we've been doing with the women leaders that we're working with now around the world. So I fortunately, I think even men are very, very in touch with this need, this global need for a shift into feminine values. So I'm really grateful for this conversation.
Thank you, Andrea. Amanda, what's your take on this topic?
Well, I resonate with what everyone said, obviously. I was thinking about how I multitask all the time, but that never includes self-care. It never includes, I think I'm so resilient and I'm so good at multitasking and I'm so good at everything, but I'm not factoring in my own personal well-being. And so my resilience is not as good as I think it is, because I'm not valuing myself. And so I feel like we are all men and women, non-binary, we're all so entrenched in these global systems of dehumanization and ascribing value to very impermanent, impossible things. And so as women, I feel like the insidious quality of devaluing our essential selves is just permeates our existence from childhood. And so then when we get to these places where we experience the stress, I at least find that I'm doing a lot of emotional labor for everyone in my life, but I'm not valuing my own emotional needs or my own body. And a practical example of that is I've learned that whenever I'm talking about compensation or money and salary, I have to preface the conversation by saying, no matter what you offer me, no matter what we talk about in this conversation, I will have to give you my answer tomorrow, because I won't know how I feel about it. I'll need to check in with my body, and I don't have that ability to do that in the moment because of how I've been socialized, because of all these reasons. And so recognizing that and communicating that, and even seeing how that's heard and responded to and met, is such a huge part of how I've started to engage with multitasking in a positive way of, you know, we talk about self-care a lot, but we don't talk about what you have to put down in order to pick that up.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing before, because you said a lot of really interesting things. Just to let the participant know, the one who came maybe a little bit late, if you have any question, please put it in the Q&A so we can pick up when needed. You can participate in this panel this way. I have a question around putting yourself last. Do you think it's something like really feminine or that women do? Or do you think it's just depends on more our personality? Do you think it's a feminine trait that to put ourselves last and put everyone first, everyone else? Andrea, maybe?
Yeah, I would say it. I don't know that it's inherently feminine, but because we are the one in the species that gives birth and has to nurse our young, we have an inherent tendency to look after the needs of others. And I definitely feel like the way that Western society has evolved us as a species, the women that I work with, the women I hang out with, they do have this sense of duty or responsibility, whether it came from family or wherever, that they feel like they need to look after everyone. I do think there are certain personalities and certain energy types who do it more, but I think it is an inherent quality that we look after other people. And I think, unfortunately, you know, I resonate with what Amanda was saying. There were so many women that were coming in with stress-related illnesses to my practice. And when I asked them about self-care and what they do to fill their cup, they were like, what? So the idea that we would be on our to-do list, like we're either at the bottom of that list if we make it on the list at all, because we take on this greater responsibility. So I'm curious to hear what the other panelists think about. Is it nature or nurture or a combination?
Absolutely. Caroline, I see you.
Yeah, I along with what Andrea is saying, I think it's really probably a combination of both. And I think we're definitely socialized to say yes and to fix and to take care. And so that translates like to leadership in corporations. Corporations often think, you know, men take charge, women take care. So when some corporations are failing, they look for a female candidate to kind of fix everything, that glass cliff phenomenon. And so I think this is definitely one of the main things that we're always encountering in our work and personal lives.
Rubda, do you have anything maybe on that?
Yeah, hi. I echo what the two ladies have also said. And there's something in our culture for sure around being able to say no. And I work also a lot with boundaries in women in leadership, this power to say no, you know, it's too much. I can't do it right now. I'm on overwhelm. It's really hard for people to say. We have such a strong conditioning to not say no. And I just what Caroline said, we're conditioned in a way to say yes. In fact, it's almost expected. It's the unspoken contract, especially in the work environment, that you're going to say yes. So to say no might bring up all sorts of things. And on top of it, the internal dialogue deficiency, you know, I'm not enough. I'm not competent enough. You know, I'm not like the men, you know, whatever, however we compare ourselves, and we do compare ourselves. So there's that part. And also I really like what Andrea said with, you know, how we kind of the carer, you know, from our, you know, past and historically as a species, you know, giving birth. And also coupled with what she said is the, am I enough? And there's some of that in there because I work in an environment sometimes only with women and a lot with men and women. And I see that issue coming up, am I enough, you know? And that comes up especially in this particular topic, you know? So yeah, I hope that answers your question a little bit.
Sure, absolutely. Before, because you raised that, my question would be, what do you think we can do to feel enough? Is there anything, any tip or anything you would have?
Ooh, that's a loaded question.
I know it's a big one.
It's the biggest, I can guarantee you right now, every woman here in this panel has worked with people and they have heard that core issue again and again. Because in my experience, and you know, I'm with Osho 45 years ago and I've been in the personal development communities for those 45 years, nonstop. So I've got to hear people sharing on this topic nonstop. It's the biggest one. You can, all roads lead to, am I good enough? It's amazing how much around achievement, around being a parent, around being a partner, you know, it's amazing how much will eventually lead, am I enough? Am I sufficient enough? So can we work with that? Yes. I do a whole workshop on that called Self-Worthy and working with that topic. And for me, and what I've noticed is it starts this way because we're so outer oriented in trying to fix ourselves and trying to be perfect, which I have a question mark. Does that really exist? This perfection that is fed to us and trying to go from outer orientation to inner orientation. And discovering the jewels and discovering, you know, the depth of who you are, you know, and then we do it through how? One of the biggest ways that's been around for thousands of years, meditation. meditation is coming home to yourself. It goes from the doing mode into listening mode. Aha, I'm here. And we're landing in ourselves. You know, we get a sense of who I am. Not me adapting to Andrea or to Caroline, yeah, or to Amanda. What do they think of me? You know, am I enough? You know, it's me going inward and saying hello, you know, meeting myself and discovering that place of being enough within myself. So this is, of course, a practice, huh? Because the mind is very, very quick. And one last thing I want to say on that. The mind is so quick, and these women, I hope, you know what I'm talking about, that I've given it a name, this ego, this pusher, this you have to do more and be more in order to be enough. And I gave it a name and I called it Bruno. I don't know why it's like a guy in my head, you know, the masculine part. You got to be more, do more, Rupta, and then maybe you're enough. So I identified and brought awareness to this internal dialogue and gave it a name. And I just say, hey, no. Especially when I'm meditating, you're not allowed here. You know, that's just one of many examples of how we have to catch ourselves to falling down the vortex if I'm not enough. Yeah.
Absolutely. Andrea, you were talking before about self-compassion. Is it something that you're using or you're using in your course around this sensation of not being enough?
Absolutely. And of course, the way that we practice compassion is generally through the metta meditation, the loving kindness or compassion meditation. Because like you, Rupta, I previously in my 30s, I identified what I call the Supreme Court justices, because I could identify different critical voices. They were sitting at a round table assessing everything I did or said or how I dressed. And it was like, of course I could never be enough. When you have eight judges in you, judging you on all these different things, you will never be enough. So over the years, for myself, I had to like decondition myself. Mine came from a childhood with a parent who was also programmed to believe that an education is the way to a secure future. You get an education, you get a job, you get a pension, that's how you can be safe in life. And so I, being a performing artist, I discovered the theater early on, and that was where my passion lie. But in order for me to keep doing theater and piano and then trumpet lessons, I had to have straight A's. So early on, I had this drive inserted into me that I had to make sure I was enough over here to do the things that I actually loved. And it got to a point that if I felt any urge, even as an adult, if I felt any urge to do something creative or artistic, oh, I would get this whole wave of shame. I would hear my dad's voice, or I hear these other judges like, oh, that's not serious. You're just a dilettante. And so all of that self-judging, like what Rupta said with coming home to the self, it took time for me to deprogram, to just sit with myself, to identify these voices and recognize that they're not me. The longer I sat and listened to them, before I even started to challenge them and tell them they were wrong, I just listened and I could identify like, oh, that was that coach on the debate team. Oh, that one sounds like my father. And in identifying where they came from, I could tell that they were not really me. And that was when I could finally start having compassion to say, you're not bad or wrong because you want to do artistic things. It's not bad to have multiple passions in life. And so practicing self-compassion and then eventually doing the compassion meditation where I'm literally directing loving kindness towards myself, the first time I did it, I just cried my eyes out because it was the first time I had said any tender words to myself, directed to myself. And I think that the more that, fortunately now with the wonderful work all of us are doing in the world and our great teachers, we're hearing these concepts more that you don't have to prove your worth to anyone. The fact that you are here on the planet with your unique soul print, your unique expression, it's perfect. Yes, you will improve on certain areas of your life, but you fundamentally are enough, full stop.
Right, yeah. Caroline, I know you had a successful career before working at the Mindsight Institute as a, you know, in a law career. So what do you think about that, this quest of you know, always doing more and achieving, trying to achieve everything.
Very familiar. These are my best friends. This keep going, do better, do more. And I think I love what Andrea said about having a Supreme Court within us. I mean, as a lawyer, I very much relate to that. And I started practicing law in a corporate law firm, lots of big cases, very male environment. So it would be really easy to feel you weren't doing enough because as a woman, I had to do more and better and longer. And I remember being hired by a, my first job hired by a New York-based law firm, you know, hundreds of lawyers, lots of international clients. And one, the only female partner in the Los Angeles office took me aside the day after I was hired and said, here's the secret to my success here. I have a sleeping bag under my desk. And that was her tip. Like, you want to survive here? You just stay here 24/7. You sleep here when you need to, and you're just here. And so this, whatever this I'm not good enough is, it's definitely fed and built by some of these very male, patriarchal, white environments that characterize many successful business venues in the world.
Amanda, what do you think about this part of not being enough or wanting to always achieve more or work more?
Oh, I think none of us have a sense of our own worthiness. We have it drilled out of us by life, unfortunately. And, you know, Michelle Maldonado, I recently heard her say, you know, the system's not broken. It's performing perfectly. It's exactly as it was designed. And it's true. And so I feel like there's constantly this reality that underlies everything, that when you go into the valleys of Kandahar or the prison industrial complex, you find that people are fundamentally good and they love each other and there's tenderness even amidst like the most profound confusion and trauma and pain. And yet that trauma and pain is still very much, it exists and we're all embroiled in it. And so it makes sense that we end up in this situation where I once heard a story that the Dalai Lama met with some Tibetan teacher coming over and he said, what's your trick? What's your key for teaching Western students? And I'm sure somebody else knows the story better than I do. I heard it a billionth hand. And I guess the Dalai Lama said, you know, the key is they all hate themselves. And that self-loathing that is so embedded in the capitalist model of striving and consumption and again, like not valuing. And I think that's what's so incredible about the global pandemic is that it's forced a revaluation. Suddenly things that, you know, I live with my parents and I help take care of my dad who's ill. And suddenly that had so much more value, you know, and it's just amazing. It's amazing how we it's all right there, but we don't always connect to it.
Yeah, that's actually really brings to the point of, you know, a lot of people recently are saying that we are changing of wave and trend, and we're going more into a world led by feminine energy. What is your take, let's put it something specific, in the workplace? Because as some of you have been mentioning, up to now, to be successful in the workplace, we needed to use a lot of masculine energy, even as women. So what is your take around how to bring the feminine energy in the workplace now? Or are we able to do that? Andrea, maybe. I see you there.
Yeah, for me, this is starting to be a harder question to answer, because over the last few years, I'm working with these beautiful, enlightened men and women who just, they understand energy, and they're recognizing that, of course, we need these feminine values of compassion and understanding and listening and fairness and honesty and integrity. So especially I work with a group of people in Iceland, which, as you know, has been very forward leading with females in the C-suite and in government. So I feel like ultimately, I feel like the whole world will catch up. And I think there's a question in the Q&A about this. I feel like there's a shift and people are waking up, so that the people that I hang around with, for example, the men who are saying the world is calling for feminine values, that the men are also recognizing that the feminine qualities that they possess are actually beneficial in the workplace. So we see all this strife and we see this tension in corporate, where we've got to focus on the bottom line. And now, given what COVID has brought in 2020, we're seeing this enormous pressure to do more with less. So we've got that pressure, and we also have to do more with more uncertainty. So many, I mentioned this yesterday in my session, that many of the executives are seeing that they are now in these leadership roles, and they feel completely unprepared for leading in the middle of a pandemic, because there was no training for this. And we've also just never experienced it before. And so right now, even though we feel like we need to charge ahead of taking stock of what's broken, what's not worked, because we can't really go back to the status quo, we've got to tune into our organizations and our workforce and really tune into the heart energy that says, what wasn't working? Where were people already undervalued and now have even more responsibilities if they weren't laid off, for example? So it's, again, it's a little bit harder for me because I already see this wave changing and maybe have played a small part in it. But I think what we will also see is the men or the more masculine energies who've been in power are also facing the reality that they don't have the answers either. And so we collectively are having to shut up and listen, which is, again, a very feminine value.
Caroline, what do you think?
Well, I think the beauty is that we're not trying to make it in a man's world anymore or take on these masculine traits. I mean, I started practicing law wearing a button-down shirt and literally a bow tie or a tie in the 80s. That was a thing. And so happily, that's behind us. I think we can look at what's working well, the three W's that many of you may have heard of. And if you look in corporations, we know now teams work well. We know collaborating works well. And we know that women are great in a crisis. This is why women are often brought in to lead a company when there is a crisis. So these are things that can only enhance our being in the work world and the entire organization. The last thing I'll say is that this is also a time of bringing the whole person to work. There was a time when, as a woman, if you had kids, you could barely, if even mention that, because it was such a negative, such a diversion from your work. Now, I think everything is pointing in the direction of the more we can embrace our teams and our people as whole people, we can all have a lot more purpose and mission, and in the end be much more productive.
Yeah, and it leads also with what Amanda said, actually, when we're talking about the children, with what's happening now, everyone has an issue maybe taking care of the children or elders or parents. And that's a topic that is up front at work that we may not have at the beginning, before, and we were kind of shutting down, right? And now it's just facing us. It's just in front of us. So we need to deal with that. Rubda, what do you think?
I would just want to, just what something that Caroline said that touched on something. I remember, because I was born in the 60s, I remember listening to James Brown, who was one of my heroes growing up as a kid. I was about 7, 8 years old, and I heard on the radio the song, "It's a Man's World." And I sang it from my heart, but I didn't get it. I did not get what the hell he was talking about. And it took me until I got to like university and I was like, oh, it's really, you know, when I had to go out into the workplace, like, oh, right, this is really the deal, what he's talking about, you know? So I had to be conditioned to get that I have to adjust to a particular model that was, thankfully, as Caroline is saying, is slowly disintegrating, or let's say dissolving, you know? And also, of course, Andrea is mentioning it. So that paradigm is changing, and I'm very grateful for that. Also, that you asked about how to bring it into the work environment. And I would say that we as women have spent years splitting off from the feminine in the corporate environment in order to adjust to the male, let's say, environment. And now more than ever, I would say embodying the feminine in the workplace is the call to action. Yeah, so, you know, already Andrea's listed some of those things that the feminine quality has, yeah, which is understanding and caring and nurturing, patience, also vulnerability, and allowing some of our feelings to be there, not from the emotional, you know, I'm kind of, when I'm in work mode and I'm sitting there working on non-tech stuff and I'm just doing some graphic or something for fun, I listen to old time radio. It's hysterical. I'm just exposing myself to you guys now. And it's from the 40s and 50s in America, here in Australia. And I listen and I hear Humphrey Bogart saying, "Lady, you're being hysterical," you know, because she's just speaking up, you know? Oh, so we have this old stigma as women that when we show a feeling, that we're being emotional, you know? And I have to say that there's a place for expressing something on a deeper level. I'm not talking about this old paradigm of, you know, the women being emotional. Actually, we have our place. And we also have our voice in that. We're passionate, yes. We're alive, yes. And we bring a lot to the workplace with that energy. And to cut off from it and split off from it is denying our full essence of who we are as women. So I would say embodying both the masculine and feminine now more than ever in the workplace would be a big help, yeah? And I think men will kind of go, wow, yeah? Already vulnerability is becoming okay, you know, a little bit okay, finally, you know? It's not considered weak, you know? It's considered courageous, you know? So, yeah.
Actually, there's a question in the Q&A. Someone was saying, my boss, also a female, often labels me too sensitive, whereas I see myself compassionate with a high EQ, I guess, and self-awareness. What are some of the things that one can do to come across right? For instance, not as a sensitive woman. I feel like it is blocking my career path as a leader to be, because in my manager's eye, I resemble a weaker personality. What is your take? Let's say Amanda, maybe, what do you think?
I think that mindfulness plays a huge role in this transformation, and I hope that we're seeing a trajectory where it's becoming more mainstream for managers and corporate C-suite individuals to actually engage in mindfulness. And one of the reasons I think it's so helpful is that you don't have to believe everything you think or feel. And so for me, when I have employees who are feeling very sensitive or highly emotional, or the words our culture uses, because of my mindfulness background, I don't get swept away by their emotions, and I'm able to realize and actually reflect back to them Because of course, in those moments, they're always so apologetic. They're always saying, I'm so stressed, I'm so emotional, I'm so crazy. They're gaslighting themselves. I'm so sensitive. And in those moments, I say, no, I like it. This is how I find out what's going on. This is where I see the red flags. I'm not getting swept away by your emotion. I'm not believing the drama that your feelings are bringing to this. They're valid, but I don't have to freak out about them. And so I feel like recognizing within oneself that your emotions and sensitivity have something to offer to you and to the workplace and to your manager reframes it so that you're able to communicate it in a different way. And also recognizing that there's a, masculine, feminine, I think gender is a language that is becoming outdated a little bit. Obviously that still has value. But I think of parents. If your kid is running, or even not your kid, your friend's kid is running to touch a hot stove, you stop them. And there's a very clear, sharp no. And I think that that also has to be a part of these things within ourselves and within our environment, that we figure out how to relax with that sharp no that is incredibly compassionate, that is incredibly kind and helpful. And that in certain situations, we have to communicate really directly in order to be kind. And that sometimes we can become enabling when we don't do that. And so, as somebody who has emotions and is extremely sensitive, it's something I work with in recognizing that there's value when I get that sharp no, even if it's coming from confusion, because I think for women, we have to learn, we're so constantly told to take accountability for other people. And we need to learn how to really only take accountability for ourselves. And those are boundaries that we do. And so all of that is tied into how you figure out how to value your sensitivity and your emotion in a way that is balanced for yourself. And then recognize that if you do that and it's not met well, then that's a message and you should find a new manager.
I agree and resonate with that so much, Amanda, that self-recognition and then setting the boundaries, which I recognize the idea of go find a new job, find a new manager, may sound a little challenging right here in 2020. But ultimately, like you, Amanda, I've always been sensitive, and perhaps like Aniko, I was previously labeled as a highly sensitive person. And being an HSP always carried such a negative connotation. And I mean, even in my family, people used to joke, like, you could cry at just reading a Hallmark card. Like, what's up with you? But I saw it as a negative thing. And like what Aniko is asking is like, what are some of the things that one can do to come across right, i.e. not as a sensitive woman? And I would say that is not what you want to do. Because what I can say for myself and for my clients, what we have done is try to numb ourselves or dumb ourselves down, not speak about our emotions, and instead just clam up. We still feel them, especially if you're any sort of an empath, you're going to still be picking up on things. But instead, I would say, as Amanda said, it's about setting these firm boundaries and maybe exploring. I met someone who was sharing some new research about this high sensory processing, and that apparently there's a genetic difference in a lot of people who are highly sensitive, and it's a high sensory processing such that the nervous system actually takes in information and processes it much more deeply, which is why we feel so sensitive. We can pick up the temperature in a room, and I'm not talking about degrees, I'm talking about the energy, the vibe, and all of that. And it's because there's a debate on whether that's we were born with it or based on our childhood and our environments, we've adapted. But the bottom line is what we can now look back is in history, there are several leaders who are said to have had this high sensory processing, or you might have still called them highly sensitive people, such as Gandhi, such as Martin Luther King Jr., Princess Diana, Mother Teresa. And so there's a shift going on, and it may not be in your workplace yet, but one of the things that recognizing this has done for me is to recognize that our sensitivity is a superpower. It is not the same burden that we've carried on believing. And as Amanda says, we've just got to start to come to recognize that our feelings are valid. And if the people around us aren't valuing it, perhaps doing a little work in learning nonviolent communication, you can communicate how you feel like they're reacting to you without it being an attack. But I definitely think that it's about embracing it. And there are companies now that are seeking out people with high sensitivity, because we do make incredible leaders. We do, as well as employees and other people in the company. So I know that 2020 is a little bit of a weird year to tell you to go find a new manager or find a new job, but you will find in very short order that you are going to be highly valued because of your sensitivity. And I would not hide that at all.
I see you, Caroline, nodded as well, right?
Well, I want to just add one thing. I always think it's an interesting dynamic when you have a female-to-female boss employee. And I think sometimes we naturally think that as women, we all think alike about certain things, especially when it comes to emotions or sensitivity. And that's not necessarily true. So I think that we have to take gender out of this. And hopefully we can get to a place where we do. I mean, we have many studies that show the same words spoken by Heidi are perceived differently than if spoken by Howard. And if they're by Heidi, they're considered bossy, aggressive, forward. And if they're by Howard, they're just evidence of a great leader. And to something Amanda said earlier about talking about a raise, money, a promotion, that's another thing. If we as women ask for a raise, we're considered too aggressive. But for men, that's a great thing. In fact, the studies show that men don't even have to ask for most of their raises. So there's a lot to unpack here. And I agree with her. And I think we've come to the consensus that if this environment continues to read as, is it our Nico is just too sensitive, then the healthiest thing to do is to make what I call a proactive pivot. You'll still have your great skills, your network, your experience, and you'll land in an unimaginably better situation.
Absolutely. We already nearly till the end, and I can't believe we only have 10 minutes left. So one thing we've been talking about a little bit, and I would like to maybe emphasize there, you were talking here and there about boundaries. How do you think we can use our boundaries in women leadership so it doesn't look, as I say, like maybe too much emotionally or too aggressive as well. So what is your take there around boundaries, women boundaries?
I can step in if you want.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a big topic. I often say, because I teach about 8-9 different courses, and almost in every course I bring in boundaries, including my leadership training course, because it's such a big one, spatial awareness. And I often say that I wish they taught this in school with kids, permission to say no. Of course, when we have an adult, and we're vulnerable when we're young, to say no was not okay often. And I'm from a generation where you don't say no to the teacher. And, I was in boarding school in England and we got the cane and the slipper. And so there was a whole kind of restriction, and I work a lot somatically, so this was me my first life. So boundaries was, when I work with boundaries, sometimes, especially with women, but not only, they go, what boundaries? It's like a foreign concept. And then I have to first work somatically to get them in the body, because some people are so disassociated that they're not even here present. So first thing I work with is being present. Are you here right now when we're talking? Are you present with me? If so, how much is present or how much is somewhere else? And then when they can get a sense of presence, you know, through sensory, I'm here, then I work with the boundaries. And sometimes I literally place a boundary around them and I say, take a look. Well, and often people start crying. Oh, I have boundaries. I have a right to have my boundaries. Oh my God. It's such a wow. And they go into a whole emotional thing. Have a right to have my boundaries. And then the first step into that, of course, is to honor your own boundaries. Of course, if you don't respect your own boundaries, who will? I will just let people roll over me and I end up in the doormat syndrome. Okay, you know? So first is to work with it within yourself, my boundaries, having a sense of it. What's okay, what's not okay, what's too much? Yeah. And when we can get a sense of that, where we can develop a muscle around awareness of I have boundaries and I have a right to have my boundaries, we really got to get that. Because some people are like, I don't deserve boundaries. They have all sorts of, you know, distortions around boundaries because people psychologically maybe abused them, emotionally abused them, or physically abused them when they were young. Yeah, someone crossed their boundary. Yeah. So then that development is so important as an adult. When we can get that, we're more embodying it. And it's not so much, as you say, Stephanie, an aggressivity then. I don't have to go up to Andrea and go, no, you know? I can embody this sense of, hey, Andrea, I hear that you want to give me this task right now. And I just received two other tasks, you know, from Amanda and Caroline, and I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. Would it be okay if I can do this beginning of next week? Yeah, so I'm honoring my own boundaries. If I don't honor my own boundaries, it will feel a bit like I'm disloyal to myself. Yeah, and I abandon myself energetically. So boundaries, I think, is one of the biggest things. And I really love that Andrea already brought it in within the first few minutes, because I think it's a massive thing. And it shows up also in intimacy. Yeah, can I say no to my partner tonight? Yeah, without it meaning I don't love you. You know, like, you know, all sorts of things. We have notions around boundaries. So it's a loaded topic and there's a lot of work around it, but it is so empowering once we start to get it. Yeah. Thank you.
Caroline, what would be for you your vision of boundaries and in leadership?
It would be to slowly dissipate all of these gendered assumptions so that we really, we can say no in these, you know, non-gender oriented ways and look out for ourselves and get to that place. That would be my vision.
Because we have like a few minutes left, any top tip for embodied women leadership? I would ask maybe Andrea, what do you think would be the top tip for today?
I think the top tip, we'll all probably have a version of it, but it really is that coming home to yourself and learning to trust your own wisdom and your intuition. It's true, we've talked about how society and the patriarchy and maybe our families of origin may have made us distrust ourselves and distrust our own voice and intuition. But the more that we can return to that, and I'm not saying it's instantaneous, but the more we can return to recognizing that each of us is here to play our individual role in the collective. And rather than trying to fit into some mold or some role that someone else is trying to force you into or has designed for you, you're gonna have to get to a point where you're confident enough to step up and be your authentic self. And it, as much as it seems like we're going against the grain, there is a bit of malleability within humanity right now. And so the more that each of us do that, we will be met with the universe kind of embracing us and saying, oh yes, you're finally here as your authentic self. Let's do this.
Perfect. Amanda, any of your top tip for women leadership, embodied women leadership?
Space. I think we are all way too close. We're all way too close to what we do, and we don't give ourselves that emotional space that is the boundary we're all talking about, you know? And it's like you care too much, but I think it's not that you can't care as much as you do, it's that we just have to care about ourselves equally.
Perfect. Caroline, what would be your top tip?
Four words: self-care is not selfish.
Yeah. Thank you. Rubda? Oh, sorry, we just can't hear you.
I touched on what they have all said, and it really finding a relaxed presence, relaxed confidence. There's a quote I say on my website, you know, your ability to relax in life is in direct proportion to your ability to trust. And we have so much tension in our nervous system. And then it's amazing how little we actually relax in ourselves, yeah, and feel ourselves and presence. And a bit like Amanda, I started with a Tibetan Buddhist upbringing. And that whole thing about being silent, still, and being with yourself, I think is now the biggest thing. Yeah. Discovering this and working from this place, yeah, with people. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, each of you, for your participation. It was really, really interesting. A lot of people, some people are saying like they really appreciate what you brought today. So before we close, just to let everyone know that Alina, a tech host today, put all the link of each of you where we can find you. I think we may have missed mindful.org, but we'll get there. So if you enjoy this panel and would like to listen to this conversation again, you still have 28 hours to watch this session. If you want to digest it and see all the sessions that are available during the conference, you can still buy the conference package, the library. You can either buy it the channel, the leadership channel, or the whole conference. It's still at a special price, I think, during this week. So it's more than welcome from our side. Anything else from you that we may have missed today? Anyone would like to tell the last word, say anything we may have missed? Just asking if you want to add anything, or we may have said everything already. I think. Well, thank you very much, Caroline, Rubda, Andrea, and Amanda, for your participation. It has been a pleasure, and looking forward to talk to you soon. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for this time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Much love from Australia.